many people didn't notice it, but yesterday was the World Day of the Poor, an observance begun by Pope Francis about 5 years ago, an annual day to focus on not only the needs of the poor, but even the existence of the poor. Because as Pope Francis has pointed out many times, what happens in the modern world is not simply that the poor are deprived or neglected, but they are completely excluded as if they didn't even exist. So that's why Pope Francis is putting the poor at the center of the stage to say, wait a minute, you can't just pretend that people in desperate need don't exist. You can't exclude them from your conversations about society or about economics or about immigration or about government policies. They're part of the picture, so don't ignore or exclude the poor. Well, today's gospel introduces us to a poor man, a poor blind beggar on the roadside near Jericho. Exactly the kind of person who is ignored, or whom people would prefer not to see. In fact, that's the reaction of the crowd when he starts calling out to Jesus. When the blind man, the beggar, starts calling out to Jesus, what does the crowd do? They say, well, stay out of the picture. Don't disturb us. Take your rightful place in society, which means no place. Be quiet. And if we want to give you something, sure, we'll be happy to give you a few coins. But don't get out of place here. You can see that's the reaction of the crowd. And that's a very common reaction. Perhaps we can see it in our own hearts. When people start making demands, one of our natural reactions is, don't make demands on me. Don't tell me what I have to do. Or don't remind me of my obligations. Fallen human nature reacts that way. So here we are reflecting on a poor man. You might, it might strike you that this man is quite familiar to us because we heard about him just a couple of weeks ago in a Sunday gospel, and we learned that his name was Bartimaeus. He's not mentioned by name here, but in the reading we had, I looked it up in our Anuwan way, that was on October 24, the 30th Sunday in Ordinary Time, World Mission Sunday, so it's about 3 weeks ago. And it was this story of the blind man near Jericho, Bartimaeus, Mark's version. Today's gospel is Luke's version. If you want to ponder this another way, you can put these two gospels side by side and notice the slight differences. It's just a way of getting into the scene and allowing your imagination to be fed by some of the details. For example, in Mark's version, which we heard 3 weeks ago, it was Jesus was leaving Jericho. In Luke's version, Jesus is approaching Jericho. So you might think, well, what is this? Does he meet us as he's leaving or as he's approaching? Of course, it's both. Sometimes we feel like God is drawing near. Sometimes we feel like God is far away. Well, those are things we can ponder. And there's lots of other little details in that are different in the two accounts. For example, in Mark's version, which we heard before, Bartimaeus throws off his cloak when he gets up. But Luke doesn't make any mention of that here. Anyway, the basic story is the same. It's obviously the same man and the same event. He hears that Jesus of Nazareth is passing by, and instead of calling out Jesus of Nazareth, he cries out, Jesus, son of David, have pity on me. See the difference? Jesus of Nazareth is a natural title. That's simply what you call someone. Jesus is from Nazareth. No special connotation. In fact, Nazareth was no great place anyway, so it was almost like an insult to say Jesus of Nazareth. But he doesn't call him that. He calls him son of David, which is a title of the Messiah. Now, we don't know if Bartimaeus was saying, I know you're the Messiah, but he was at least making a leap of faith to say, you are more than simply a man who happens to be from Nazareth. You are son of David. You are the descendant of the great king. You have a mission from God, and I am a man in need. Son of David, have pity on me. And when they try to stop him, crowds tries to stop him, he calls out louder. That's a great prayer attitude. When we run into obstacles, sometimes we really can't do anything else than pray, but we should never give up praying. In fact, when things get worse, pray harder, pray louder. It doesn't have to be loud shouting, but from the heart, stronger cry to God from the heart. Have pity on me, have pity on me. Now, the crowd probably thought, because they had less faith than Bartimaeus, the crowd probably thought he was asking for money, because he's a beggar after all. What do beggars want? They want money or food. Jesus, when he asks them to bring him near, asks the man himself, "What do you want me to do for you?" It's a great question to ponder. God asking us, what do we want him to do for us? What do we want him to do? What do you want me to do for you? The blind man could have said, "Can't you give me a little money? I'm hungry, give me some food." He doesn't. He leaps to the impossible. "Lord, please let me see." Jesus didn't have any money, but he has divine power. He has the power to open our eyes. What do you want me to do for you? One of the things to remember about prayer is that God already knows what we need. We don't have to inform him of our needs. He knows everything. So why do we have to pray at all? The question comes up. Well, because we have to express to God our need. We have to open ourselves to God. The way St. Augustine puts it, we have to enlarge our desires so that we can receive the bigger gift that God has for us. If all we ask for is money, well, maybe God knows that's not what we need, or it's not good for us, and he doesn't give it to us. But if we ask to be able to see, meaning see with faith, to see truth, to see the will of God, that's the kind of gift God wants to give us, but we have to open our hearts to receive it. We might be asking for something that we don't really want, and God won't give it to us. Remember the story of the man who was sitting near the pool of Siloam. He was sick for years and years, I think it was 38 years. And when Jesus came up and asked him the same question, you know, what do you want? The man says, "I don't have anybody to help me." Remember that passage? It's in John's Gospel. "I don't have anybody to help me." He didn't ask Jesus, "Help me." He just complained about what he didn't have. Bartimaeus doesn't fall into that self-pity thing. He says, "Please, Lord, let me see." He enlarges his desire so that he can receive a greater gift from God. And that's what happens. Have sight, Jesus says, your faith has saved you. Why does he say your faith has saved you? Because to have faith is to see. Faith is better seeing than sight with our physical eyes. He immediately received his sight and followed him. So not only did he have sight with his eyes again, but he saw that the way to live is to follow Jesus. He followed him, giving glory to God. And when they saw this, all the people gave praise to God. So that's a little detail that we didn't get in Mark's account. We have the account that Bartimaeus followed Jesus on the way, but not that everybody else was inspired by what they saw. So it's a little bonus in this today's gospel. If you want to ponder this a little further, you can also look at the front cover of your Animum Way. There's a artistic representation of Jesus healing a blind man. And all the different people are having their own reactions. Some people aren't even paying any attention. So that's just another avenue into pondering this mystery. A beautiful story and a beautiful example to us, or lesson to us, about prayer and about faith and about seeing. What do we want? What do we want to see? What are we really asking of God? Let's enlarge our desires. Now, when we turn to the first reading, we get this terrible story from the beginning of the first book of Maccabees, a terrible story of persecution, an ever-increasing persecution of the Jews by the Greek, a Greek king. And the end of the reading is, the faithful Israelites preferred to die rather than break the covenant, rather than be unfaithful to God. And they did die. Terrible affliction was upon Israel. Now, when we read that, we say, well, why didn't God save his people? Why did God allow them to experience terrible affliction? And this is one of the troubling things in every age. Why does God allow people whom he loves to experience such terrible things? He healed Bartimaeus. Why doesn't he stop the persecution? There are many reasons, of course, and part of it is the sin condition of the Israelites at the time. They, in some mysterious way, brought this upon themselves by their infidelity. So the faithful ones have to suffer for the unfaithfulness of the people as a whole. But there's also this process God allows, which is a purifying process, a painful stripping of things that tend to interfere with our relationship with God. Persecution is certainly a painful stripping. One of the things that we might ponder in reading this is about the limits of the power of government. This is kind of relevant nowadays because lots of debates about what the government can do and should do and has the power to do in relation to public safety, the pandemic, or any kind of decisions that affect people. The government, that's what a government is for, to make decisions that will bring about the best order for everybody, the common good. So decisions have to be made about public works and about public health. What do you do when there's a pandemic? What do you do about people in need? What do you do with tax money? How much do you charge? All these kinds of decisions that have to be made. But when it comes to how we relate to God, that's off limits for the government. No government has a right to say, you have to worship this way, or you're not allowed to worship this way. And that's the violation that this king Antiochus Epiphanes commits. Not only does he institute oppressive measures, which are just bad government, but he violates the right of God to be the center of worship. He makes his own, the king makes his own decisions about his religion and how he wants the people to worship. And that's where the Jews were correct to say, no way, we will not follow that rule. Maybe we have to pay high taxes, maybe we have to serve in the military, maybe we have to follow this and that rule we don't like, but we will not follow a rule that violates our relationship with God. And that has to be our position too. We can never allow government, culture, society, family, or anybody or anything interfere with our relationship with God. That's the first commandment. And that's why the people are right to say, we would rather die than be cut off from God and the practice of our religion. We'd rather die. And they did die, that's the thing. Now, this is not the end of the story. This is the beginning of the book of Maccabees. And we will see if we follow the story that God was faithful to his people in time of persecution, and he brought them ways to persevere. We who know the bigger picture because of Christian faith know that those who die for God are victorious in God. So it's not such a terrible thing to die for your faith. In fact, that's a great victory, martyrdom. But that doesn't come out in today's reading. The reason I mention it is because focusing on the experience of the blind man and how he, and on how his prayer is answered, that lesson has to apply even in times when we're suffering, when we're experiencing persecution and it seems that God is not answering. We have to enlarge our desires, strengthen our faith, call out louder, "Jesus, Son of David, have pity on me. I can't see what you're doing in this time of suffering. What are you doing in our country? What are you doing in the world? I can't see. Have pity on us." That's the right response. Don't let anybody interfere or prevent you from calling out to God with faith.